Welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy shit. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel, Esquire.
You can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holy Shit for September 11th, 9/11, 2019. I am your co-host, Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm your co-host, Frank Natel.
And we are on episode number 29, Frank. You believe this? 29. Not too
bad. I'm still 29. I'm 29 in my mind. How about you?
You know what? I try so hard. I'm around, you know, but most everybody on my floor, with the exception of my son, is late 20s, early 30s, right? So I'm always around 29s. And, man, in my brain, I can do it. My body, however, kind of lets me know otherwise.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're getting to that point where we can only fool ourselves just so long, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as much as you think you got it, you know, it's perception, right? You think you can do it. You think you can hang with these guys. And you get on a floor with them and you start working with them. And don't forget, we're being, you know, semi-gentle with each other. And I end up driving home kind of sitting a little sideways or, you know, maybe like bent over a little bit. And then I get home and by the time I hit the bed, I'm like, God, I'm sore. I got to quit. I'm getting too old for this shit.
It's the truth. But, you know, 18 years ago today, we were probably closer to the age of 29, I'm sure.
18 years ago today. Frank, I can't believe it's been 18 years, right?
It's really hard to believe.
I put this in perspective. Back at the end of July, my son turned 19. Okay?
Yep.
So for all intents and purposes, everything he knows is post 9/11.
Okay? For sure. Yeah. Same with my daughter.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, both of your kids really, right? Cause they don't, you know, I sit here and I look at, I saw a quote from, Mika Brzezinski. And like I said, I'm not a big Morning Joe fan at all, but, whenever Mika's not playing second fiddle to Joe, she's actually pretty bright. And her quote was when she was interviewed about 9/11, and her quote was, and it really, 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 it just hits it dead on. Everything's divided into before and after. It was really a moment that changed absolutely everything about our outlook, our families, our way of life, and our perspective. Frank, I can remember talking to the generation ahead of us, our parents, and even our grandparents. And I remember as a kid talking to them or hearing them talk amongst each other with them and their friends or whatever. And especially like in my household or my parents' household, right? They would always talk about John Kennedy a lot. Big, strong, staunch Catholic family, right? And so John Kennedy was the guy that could walk on water, right? The only Catholic president we've ever had. And you could tell how they were talking, and they kept saying the same thing. And I always thought they were full of shit. They kept saying the same things over and over and over again. The same thing. The one thing they always said was, I can remember literally everything about that day, the day he was shot. There's nothing about that day I do not remember. And they would tell me, what they were wearing, where they were when they heard the news, who was around them. Just the smallest minute details, right? Things that you would never even think. And I always thought they were full of shit. I really did. I always thought, no, there's no way you can remember this stuff, right? There's no way. I mean, it was too precise. It was too clear. It was too much, right? And now this thing hit. And I remember that day 18 years ago, Frank, as clearer than anything that's ever happened in my life, clearer than my wedding, clearer than, you know, my son being born. the big things in your life, right? Nothing stands out to me more about, you know, one day or one event in my life than this did. And I end up saying the same thing. I can tell you everything I did that day. I can tell you what I was wearing that day. Frank, I can't tell you what we went over in class last night. All right. I can tell you everything about that day 18 years ago, down to the most insignificant detail. It literally changed everything that we see. It changed our world. It totally and completely changed our world.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I'm sure everybody around the country has their moments that they can remember, and they think about things, you know, people that were probably in Northern Virginia, you know, on their way to work, maybe, you know, the fear that was probably in their minds at the time that they heard that the Pentagon was hit. The people in New York City, incredibly, you know, that had to live through the iconic towers falling down that day, you know, seeing that first plane hit it, and then the other plane hit the second tower, and hours later, the towers falling down, and all the debris that was scattered throughout Manhattan, you know, just the images that we remember that seared into everybody's mind that day. But if you were in that region, you know, imagine the fear that you would have. And the funny thing is, we here in Pennsylvania, you know, ironic thing is, we here in Pennsylvania, you know, had a similar feeling, because a plane went down that was in that whole cadre of terrorists, or the whole cadre of the event, went down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. You know, and if you drive the Pennsylvania Turnpike, you know, if you go at night, you can see the lights off to the right as you're heading east on the Turnpike for the memorial in Shanksville. And, you know, it's pretty close to where we live. It's not that far in terms of geography. And knowing that, you know, not knowing what was going to happen next, was one of the feelings that, you know, I can still remember, is what's going to happen next. You know, you remember all the specific things, like you said. Certainly, I know I could tell you I was at my office. I could tell you I was watching that happen. I listened to the radio broadcast when they first said a plane, you know, ran into one of the towers in the Twin Towers, and there was uncertainty around that. But then when the second plane hit, it was pretty crystal clear. But I can remember my feeling was, what's going to happen next? You know, what's the next shoe that's going to drop? Who's going to get hurt next? What building's going to get hit next? What are they targeting? And I remember I had a hearing in Pittsburgh that day, scheduled for 1 p.m. I believe it was 1 or 1:30 p.m. And I called the office almost immediately just to say, you know, what's going on? And it was in a federal building, and the United States Steel Tower. And I said, what's going on? Are we still scheduled for this hearing? And they said, yeah, why wouldn't we be? And I said, well, I don't know if you know what's going on, but, you know, the Twin Towers were hit, and there's some indication that other sites and targets might be hit. And they said, well, no, you know, you're scheduled for your hearing, going to be here. And within 15 minutes, I received a call back saying everything's canceled for today.
Yep. Yeah. Everything at the Lawrence County Courthouse, the jail was evacuated. My wife was going, I'll tell you a story, Frank, and I'm going to, somebody we both know, but somebody we both graduated with. I was working at the engineering firm that I was working at the time. I shared an office with Dan Nero. I don't know if you remember Danny or not.
I absolutely remember Dan Nero, yes.
And his phone rings. Our desks were kind of back to back, and his phone rings, and he answers his phone, and he's talking to his wife, and all I heard him, I remember him saying is, well, so you're kidding. Really? Wow. Okay. Yeah. We'll go look right now. And he says, okay, thanks. Bye. And he hangs up and he looks at me and he goes, you're not going to believe this shit. And I said, what's that? He goes, somebody just flew into the World Trade Towers. And I said, both of them. He said, no, one of them. I said, you're kidding. He said, no. I said, and this is how naive we were at the time, right? I said, oh my God, man, that guy had a bad night, you know?
Right.
And so we go up into another engineer's office who had a little, and it was a little black and white, I want to say it was a 3.5 or 5 inch screen, right? Just a tiny little shitting thing with an antenna. And we go into his office and he's like, what are you guys doing here? We grab this TV, we turn it on, we're like, look. And it wasn't a few minutes later that second plane, you know, hit the South Tower. And we stood there and we said, all of us at the same time said, this isn't an accident.
Yeah.
Right? It was like, this isn't an accident. Then you hear about what happened in Shanksville. A few years later, I ended up working for the engineering firm that actually did the site work for the Shanksville Memorial. That was tough to do. But we're standing in this guy's office. He was a structural engineer. You know, I'm a civil guy. Well, at the time I was a civil guy. He's a structural guy. He was literally our bridge department, right? And we're standing there watching these buildings, and we all looked around at each other, and you're in a room full of engineers, and he sits there and he says, now imagine, you know, five or six grown adult human beings around this little 5-inch TV, black and white TV screen. And he looked at me and I said, I know exactly what you're thinking. He said, what's that? I said, how is that building still standing? He said, yeah. How is this thing still standing? And, you know, well, we know what happened after that, but it's like these little things, right?
Yeah.
And the reason that I bring this up is because, you know, other than today being the 18th anniversary, you, whenever you were telling your story, you were talking about people around you, right? And the things that were going on, the interactions you had with people going on around you. Whenever, yep. Whenever, you know, my story, I'm telling you about the people and the interactions that were going on in an engineering department where you were looking at it from a law point of view. We're looking at it as engineers, right? So even though different points of view, the interaction is still the same.
Right, right.
Here's what our fearless leader had to do today. At 8:46, right, the exact time the first plane hit the World Trade Center, Trump decided to go on a tirade about a hypothetical poll done by one of the worst pollsters of all time. Of course, I'm quoting the Amazon Washington Post / ABC poll, which predicted I would lose to crooked Hillary Clinton by 15 points. In parentheses, how did that work out? Sleepy Joe, Pocahontas, and virtually all others would beat me in the general election. How about that? At the exact same time on 9/11. Even if you're fucking brain dead, somebody in your cabinet, somebody in this building has to look at you and say, hey, look, today's the day our towers were hit. You know, the day you said you saw all these Muslims dancing in the street. Remember that day?
Yeah.
He decided to go on about a hypothetical poll. Well, what he called a hypothetical poll. He then went on this huge tirade. I mean, he just went off on Twitter, like, you know, he always does, because that's how, you know, cowards do things. Going on and on and on about the fake news, going on and on and on about this, going on and on and on about that. This total and complete lack of empathy, Frank. I don't get it. I mean, you would think, even if you're the most inapathetic, if that's even a word, a person who totally has a complete lack of empathy like he does, you would at least have enough dignity to fake it, right? You would least have enough dignity. I mean, 300 people, 3,000 people dead, gone. All they did was wake up and go to work or get on an airplane to go to you know, vacation or whatever it was. That's all they did. And this clown is bitching at the exact time that first plane hit the tower. He's bitching about a poll.
It's really all about him, you know, and 18 years since that event, it's still all about him. You know, that day there's a lot of video out and people, you know, can readily watch it. All you have to do is go on Twitter or search on YouTube for the video, anything you want, you know, you can find this. Just type a Google search. What did the Trump call on 9/11, bragging about his buildings. And, you know, that's what he did. He was concerning himself with the idea that now he would have the tallest building in New York City, because the other building that was taller than his building at the time was the Twin Towers. So that's what his concern was. His focus was on how he had now had the biggest building in New York City.
Whenever he got to the Pentagon today to lay a wreath at the site of the memorial to those who died when the plane hit the building, right, when it hit the Pentagon building, he again turns it on himself. And his quote, quoting him, CNN's quoting him, "I vividly remember when I first heard the news, I was sitting at home watching a major business television show. Earlier that morning, Jack Welch," so he's dropping names, "the legendary head of General Electric, was about to be interviewed when all of a sudden they cut away." He then went on to talk about all these various theories, about what happened. "It was a boiler fire, but I knew that boilers weren't at the top of a building. It was a kitchen explosion. No one knew what happened before he said, then they saw the second plane go into the tower from, he saw the second plane go into the tower from his office window. Frank, I guess my biggest problem isn't with him. All right. A piece of shit's a piece of shit. You just deal with it, right? You just deal with what you got to deal with. You smile and nod and you put up with them for as long as you have to put up with them. And then you go home and, pour a glass of scotch thinking, oh my God, this guy. But he supported people. There are people who actually like this guy.
It's amazing. It's amazing that the people that like him are the same people who would say, we're all about the first responders. We're all about the police. We're all about, supporting our military. And the person that they support is, he can't take the moment, this momentous occasion, to reflect back upon those people first, the first responders. He can't, God forbid that he could even just make the whole day about them and not even mention himself once at all. But even just like make your first comments, the first tweet of the day, the first anything today, be about the people who lost their lives or who sacrificed something larger on that day. People maybe didn't lose their lives that day, but there were a lot of people that lost their health, ultimately lost, we all as a country, as you started this show, we all lost something. There's the pre-9/11 and the post-9/11. People say we lost our innocence when Kennedy was assassinated. Well, we lost maybe our idealistic view of, the idea that we were somehow protected and insulated in this country, that we were somehow immune from this kind of event in this country. We are no longer immune. We know that. We know that we have to deal with the culture that, unfortunately, the rest of the world has had to deal with for so long. And it's come to our home, and it's come upon us. But the point is, we've all had to deal with that as a nation, and we've all had to deal with it one way or the other, but he has not recognized that in any way remotely. And his supporters who claim to be all about, the military and about patriotism and about country and country first and everything else, for some reason refuse to acknowledge that he is shitting on their ideals.
Yeah, he really is. And these folks love him for it.
It's totally amazing. And it's just like, I'm sorry, go ahead, Master.
No, it is. I mean, I'm sorry for cutting you short a little bit, but it's just absolutely amazing that you have people who will look at him and say, damn right. And I'll be honest with you, Frank, they're not someplace, very far away. Right. I work with these guys.
Yeah. And I have friends who I still maintain friendships with. And I talked yesterday. I know we're going to talk soon about John Bolton, but you've got a guy who, and we've talked about it on this show, this very show, you've got a guy who's had members of his cabinet. And we've gone back through the names in the past. We don't have to go through all the other names. But for example, John Bolton recently, who is one of the most, if you're on the right, okay, and if you're a hawk on the right, if you're pro-military, you're pro, let's make the military the solution to a lot of the problems in the world, you really like John Bolton, if you're on that side of the aisle, so to speak. And you're on that side of the aisle, not just as a Republican, but you're a hawk, okay? John Bolton resigned from his position within Donald Trump's administration because he could not stand the direction that Donald Trump was taking with the Taliban, who, by the way, harbored the terrorists who masterminded 9/11. So let's tie it all together, right?
Right.
And when I brought this up to my friend yesterday, that it should be sending alarm bells with you, buddy. I'm sorry, but it really should. That now this guy is telling you he can't work with the president anymore. And you know what he said to me? I see it like a band. You know, I've been in all these bands in my life, and sometimes you just got to fit the right parts together. You know, it doesn't always work with this drummer. It doesn't always work with this bass player, this vocalist. We have to get rid of those people and bring somebody else until we get the right chemistry and the right sound. I said, yeah, that's okay with music and all, but we're talking about national security. We're talking about we're talking about our lives. We're talking about our country. We're talking about, you know, our safety and what our standing is in the world. And even though I don't agree with John Bolton's solution to things, he was the guy that your president had in that position. There was some continuity there. He knows about the safety and security of our country. And now he's flying blind without him because he pissed him off by inviting the Taliban to Camp David on or 3 days before the anniversary of 9/11.
Right? It's like this guy just does not give a fuck about you know his country at all. Look, I'm not a big John Bolton fan. I never was. I always thought this guy was a war hawk. He's somebody who appeared to me to be extremely insecure and always all the time. It's not odd that they're so close. It was Bolton who always wanted to bomb something. He didn't find anything he didn't want to bomb.
Right.
But you're the Taliban to Camp David, which is bad enough, right? That in itself is bad enough. But you're inviting them there 2, 3, 4 days before the anniversary of 9/11 that was a result of the Taliban. It just doesn't, you know, going back to where we started, this guy just doesn't get it. And he doesn't get it simply because he doesn't give a fuck about it, right? Because you can't be his age and be this naive about things. You're his age and you do these things because you just don't care. It just doesn't matter anymore. We're not talking about an 8, 9, 10-year-old, right? This is somebody who just does not care about anything else that, well, let me rephrase that. He doesn't care about anything that doesn't have his name, brand, or logo on it. He just does not care. And then there was a pissing contest about Bolton's, you know, Trump tweeted at noon on Tuesday, I informed John Bolton last night that his services were no longer needed at the White House. That's not what happened. All right. So he's, I mean, he can't even get this shit right. Bolton comes back and saying, I offered to resign last night, and President Trump said, let's talk about it tomorrow. Right? And then he puts this tweet out. What the fuck are you doing? What are you doing? Bolton told Washington Post Bob Costa, and this is coming from the Chicago Tribune, let's be clear, I resigned, having offered to do so last night. I will have my say in due course, but I have given you the facts of my resignation. My sole concern is U.S. national security. First of all, I don't believe that's his sole concern, but right, I don't. No. I think the whole 9/11 thing, right? I really believe, and maybe I'm naive, but I really believe that was the tipping point. This is why, and I don't think that they were on very stable ground to begin with. And I mean Bolton and Trump. I don't think they were exactly walking around, you know, holding hands, singing Kumbaya. But I think this sent him over the edge. I think I really do. And this guy wants, like I said, he wants to bomb the fuck out of everything. But I really think that this is what pushed him over the edge. And he said, you know what? I'm done.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. And, you know, Trump's reaction is, it's so consistent with the way he reacts to so many things like this. He reminds me of, like, you know, the worst parts of, you know, my younger self, or, you know, other folks that we may have encountered in our life. It's like, you know, when you know your girlfriend and your junior high is going to break up with you, you're like, she says, we got to talk. And you're like, oh, okay. Well, you know what, before you say it to me, let's not go out anymore. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, exactly.
Bolton says, you know, Bolton says, hey, I can resign. Oh, let's talk about that tomorrow, John. You know, well, it's late tonight. We got a lot on the agenda. We'll talk about it. And then he tweets out to the rest of his friends, quote unquote, and everybody else in the world, don't hear anything that anybody else says about this. I was ready to break up with John. I was the one who's going to break up with John. Believe me, you know, he wants to save face and not have the public, his 15, you know, 13-year-old friends in junior high with him, think it was him that broke up with his girlfriend, not the other way around. So it's crazy.
And he is the latest in a long line of folks. And again, Frank, I try to apply logic to things, and honest to God, I shouldn't do it. I really shouldn't, because it comes back to bite me in the ass every time. But he is the latest that proves that blind loyalty to a narcissist never works, right? It never works. Yeah. And yet he still has people that he's surrounded with, or he surrounds himself with, is what I should say, who blindly loyal, absolutely blindly loyal.
And let's talk about this. But, you know, this idea of blind loyalty and where it's getting us, because at this point in time, if you're John Bolton, but again, what you said about his concern about the national security and interest of our country not being his primary concern. And I'll tell you where it's clear that you're right on that, because if you're in the cabinet, you have the unique opportunity as a cabinet member to begin the 25th Amendment proceedings. And if you're at this point now with John Bolton and you look around and you say, Mattis left, Tillerson's gone, the adults in the room are gone. Okay. Mm-hmm. Who's left with any kind of credibility here? It's probably, and I don't mean credibility with you and me. I mean credibility in the eyes of the governmental structure, so to speak. The governmental structure, you've got people in the cabinet, you've got people in the administration, you've got people in Congress, you've got people in the Senate. But the point is, you know, those people in the cabinet, they can look at the 25th Amendment and they can say, this guy's off the rails and it's up to us to start this process. That's what we're here for. So he and Pence, you know, should have sat down and said, this nut is inviting people to the Taliban. Or, you know, he's specifically told the public on the eve of 9/11 that he invited the Taliban to Camp David. It's time. If you really have the national interest at heart, then you would be sitting down with the rest of the cabinet members saying, I'm one of the last adults in the room. You're one of the last adults in the room. It's time.
Yeah. And yet you're not hearing any of that, are you?
No.
You're really not. You're not hearing any of that. You're hearing, the president wants this, and the president wants that, and, you know, I mean, you don't have an adult in the room.
No.
And you have a whole bunch of people, and maybe this is my biggest problem, Frank. Maybe it is. You have a whole bunch of people who are more concerned with their jobs, right? They're more concerned with their position in the White House, which, let's face it, is if you know, if God loves us, is only going to be around for another, you know, 14 months or so. They're more interested in their job than they are about their country, than they are about the integrity of the White House or the integrity of the office or you know what this is, what, to make it even more simplistic, how this is going to affect things in the future. They just don't care. It boggles my mind that you have all these people, you have this many people who simply just don't care what is going to happen or how these actions that they're taking are going to affect not only the next year or two, but let's be honest, the next generation. These people have to have kids. Some of them have to have grandkids. They just simply don't care what's going to happen.
Yep. And I know it's not something that we plan to talk about. I'm just going to throw this name out there because it's, and I'm going to connect it to something that we always talk about. I'm going to interject it a little bit earlier today. You know, if those folks aren't going to care, it's up to us. It's up to us to look around the world and see how change happens. Change happens in Hong Kong by a bunch of people taken to the streets. Change happened in Puerto Rico. They got rid of their governor before that term was up by taking to the streets. You know, in the Ukraine, they were able to get rid of the sham president that was installed by Putin by taking to the streets. It's going to be up to us. And, you know, you look at Ben Sasse, who is the Republican senator from Nebraska, who on the eve of Trump's election and after that, beat the hell out of Trump in his postings. He said he would vote for a third party candidate over Trump if it came down to Trump against Hillary. As a Republican, he said that. And then he later said why. And he explained that Trump is all about division and about himself. He's not about the nation or about conservatism. And then all of a sudden, Sasse went radio silent. And look, you hear what happens yesterday. Trump endorsed Sasse for his 2020 Senate bid. So these folks are also all about themselves. Anybody that's in this power structure. And that's what we have to look at as people and say, nobody's there protecting us. We got to protect ourselves. We got to look out for our own interests. And it's time. It's time. September is upon us. We're here. We're you know, 10 days away from the time to go down to Washington or to a local march and participate, because it's really on us at this point.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. And you had the perfect analogy. You're seeing things that are happening in China, where you don't have these rights. They're doing it anyhow, right? You saw what happened in the UK, and if I'm not mistaken, if you look at your news feed today, you're going to see that some Scottish court declared this idiot do. Who's the prime minister over there now? Who's that jackass?
Boris Johnson.
Boris Johnson. Yeah, that whenever he shut it down, that was illegal.
Shut down parliament. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Some Scottish court did that. And I kind of say it like in passing because I don't know the significance of it. I don't know if their court structure is set up the same way ours is. It very well could be, or else why would anybody bring it to that court? But somebody did. And they found that him shutting every... Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. What they found illegal was whenever you're going to do something like this, you have to take it to the Queen, and she has to say, okay, it's shut down. And that's strictly a procedural thing, right? She really can't say yes or no. He just tells her, we're shutting it down, and then she makes a proclamation that it's being shut down. But he lied to her whenever he told her that, or whatever information he gave her was a lie.
It was premature lie. Okay.
Yeah, it was, and that's why that court determined that it was illegal for him to do that. But you're seeing the people of that nation. Well, let's face it, in a lot of ways, maybe in bigger turmoil than ours is, taken to the streets, and they're standing up and they're fighting for what they believe in. It's sad though that. In a lot of ways, we're not doing the same thing. And I don't mean to say that to the people that are in the circles that we're with, right? That who will go and march and do what they got to do. But that person who's sitting next to me in the office, who just, they don't care. That's the problem. You know, they're more than willing. They don't care what Trump does. They probably voted for the asshole. They'll probably do it again. I guess my biggest problem is, look, I don't care if you agree with his platforms. Well, first of all, yeah, I do, because I want you to tell me one of them. Just tell me one. But even if you agree with his platforms, you can't sit there and say, look, even though I agree with him, you have to sit there and look at what's happening and say, you know what? The way he's going through with this is going to destroy everything we have. Even if for no other reason, you sit there and say, eventually, the libs are going to be in charge now. What's going to happen whenever they do the same shit we're doing?
Yeah. It's all about, you know, Ben Sasse, speaking of Ben Sasse, if you look it up on Google, just say Ben Sasse versus Trump. His post from September or October of 2016, no, it was June of 2016. June of 2016 talks about the fact that Trump wants to destroy America as we know it. He saw that and said that back then. And that's exactly what he's doing. And some people, okay, listen, if that's what you're about, if you're about, let's take apart this country, what are we trying to go for? What is it that we want? What's the better version of ourselves? Is it going to be accomplished by Trump? Is it going to be accomplished by somebody who wants to install himself as a king and be a dictator? Which is, if you listen to him, he says it over and over again. I deserve more time. Time was taken away from me because of this investigation. Do you know that in 2024, I can't run again after that? I can only stay until 2024. I think I should get another term. You know, he's been saying, Xi Jinping, he's a president for life. Wouldn't that be great if we had that here? I'm just saying, wouldn't that be great if we had that here? Look at what the guy is saying. So is this what we want? If you want this government and our country to change and get upended, okay. I mean, look, there may be some things that piss you off. There's things that piss me off. But within the framework of what we had with the original thought about the three branches of government, the courts that protect our rights, the Constitution in the way that it was supposed to be framed, the idealism of it, if we could return to that, isn't that what everybody would want? What is it that people want when they want this torn down? Because I highly doubt that their ideas of what they want would line up with what Trump is going to try to do.
Oh, and then I wonder how much of that is because they're reading or watching, you know, the Fox News versions of, you know, Frank, one day we're going to have a show just on messaging, right? Just on how these networks are messaging things and how they've gone from spinning to flat out lying. Problem is the stuff happens so quickly that even at, you know, 3 o'clock today, Frank, whenever I had talked to you, you know, earlier before we got on the air, I'm sitting here looking at what just happened, you know, what's happening now, because these things are just so dramatic and are happening so quickly that I think we have to take a second and step back and say, you know what, we're just not going to do that. We're just going to pick topics and stick to them because we're just bouncing around. Whenever we talk about how this guy's absolutely just killing us, or I don't want to say killing us. That's not fair. But we had a he's killing a lot of people who aren't white. That's for damn sure. I don't know if you've been paying attention, but we had a CIA informant, right, who was working in the Kremlin for God knows how long, and he was giving us information like crazy, right? And he was the one guy, and I'm telling you, years, like decades worth. I'm not talking like a couple, 6 months, a year or two. I'm talking a long, long time.
And you know how long it takes to get somebody like that in position to be able to do that. It's not like you could just send a new spy over there or train a new spy or turn somebody and say, oh, we're going to get them that close to the information.
According to the New York Times, this informant extracted from Russia. We had to extract them. And, you know, we can talk, we'll say here in a minute why we had to extract them. CIA informant extracted from Russia had sent secrets to the U.S. And here's the two big words, for decades. This is on the New York Times, right? Decades ago, the CIA recruited and carefully cultivated a mid-level Russian official who began rapidly advancing through the governmental ranks. So he was on the fast track up to the top. Eventually, American spies struck gold. The longtime source landed an influential position that came with the highest access levels to the Kremlin. So he had clearances out his ass. He had it like crazy. And we had to pull him. And do you know why?
Our fearless leader.
Because they were afraid Trump was gonna let the Kremlin know about it. How do you like that? How do you like that? Now I'm coming. My source is the New York Times, right, and the Washington Post.
You want to know how I know it's true? Beyond the fact that it came from the Washington Post and the New York Times, the Kremlin put out a statement saying, "Yeah, well, the guy that they called back to the United States, he didn't have direct access to Putin." That was their talking. That was their talking. They didn't deny that the guy was inside the Kremlin, that he had highest clearances. They just said, yeah, he didn't have direct access to Putin. What does that mean? Direct access to Putin, that he didn't sit down with him every day, that he wasn't the guy that was his, you know, immediate confidant, and he wasn't his first, you know, right-hand man. He wasn't like the vice president or whatever. You know, they didn't deny that he was there in the Kremlin with the highest security clearances. They just said he didn't have direct access to Putin. So clearly was a high level guy, and he clearly was in place, and they're trying to save face by putting out that statement. That's how I know it's true.
You know, and they did this. Here's the best part. They did this in 2017. So for all intents and purposes, we're looking at 2 years ago, or damn near 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. You know, CNN is reporting, and this is, you know, back on the 9th, in a previously undisclosed secret mission in 2017, the U.S. successfully extracted from Russia one of its highest level covert sources inside the Russian government, which, you know, administration officials with direct knowledge told CNN. What was scary is the reason, again, you know, I'm kind of repeating what we said, is the reason they pulled him, they were terrified that Trump was going to give him up. Now, even at best, even if you take this at and you spin this, you know, you become the Fox Entertainment Network, and you spin this in the best possible light, he gives him up simply out of ignorance. Right, he's the outsider. He doesn't realize what he's doing. Yada yada yada. Which, I'm sorry, 33 years in the most powerful position on the planet, that's no longer an excuse. But let's just assume it is. You're still having your CIA, your Central Intelligence Agency, giving this up, giving this vital resource up that's been helping us out for decades, because they're afraid. At best, at the very best, you're a fucking moron.
Yeah. Right?
That's the best spin you have, is because the guy who's occupying the White House is an idiot.
Yeah, let's go back to 2017 and talk about, you know, the first time he met with the Russians in the Oval Office, and he sent people out and said nobody was covering it, right? He wasn't allowing any access in there when he was talking to them. And then fast forward to Helsinki, he has a similar type meeting, and the only people in the room is the interpreters. He sends everybody else outside the room. So as the CIA, you got to say, we don't know what he's giving them. We don't know what information he's giving them. So, you know, at least we're in the room, if somebody's in the room, they can say, get that guy out, because he just gave him up. So they had to act preemptively and say, we just don't know what's going to happen. And that, my friends, is the epitome of how this president clearly jeopardizes all of us and is not in the best interest of our country. And you don't need anything more than just that fact alone to realize he's not pro-military. He's not pro-police. He's not pro-United States first. He's not patriotic. That right there is the key. There's so much more. There's so much more. But, you know, I think, and I know we're running short on time, I'm going to try to transition us. I think, you know, the other thing you have to look at is you started the show with how he's all about himself. He couldn't make it about anybody else but himself, even on 9/11. He likes to sell to his base. He tried to sell to everybody, but it was transparent to most people. He said, I'm going to give up my salary, my presidential salary. I don't need to make that money. I'm here to volunteer my services for this country. Bullshit. what he had in mind and what he's doing, and it's clear now, is he's profiting from the office of presidency by making people stay in his properties, including Pence and including Barr is going to use his hotel for the Christmas party. The Secret Service agents, the FBI, everybody has to stay at his properties. In Scotland, he had the Air Force using the airport closest to his property, Turnberry, because he wanted to make sure that his property was saved and that he made money and profited from that. So there was all these hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, actually, going into his property to prop it up, forcing the Air Force to stay there and use the airport in Shannon, which was a very little used airport, and was actually, they were thinking about closing it because it didn't have enough business. And then that would have killed his resort, because if there's not an airport close by, who would have been flying in to go to his resort? So he got them to refuel at that air base near Shannon. And talk about, you know, making it all about yourself and profiting from the office, and not caring about anything else, and just only being about your best, your own interest, not the country's interest. He's making millions and millions and millions of dollars and setting up this this authoritarian regime that he plans on having a dynasty even with his kids. If you listen to his campaign manager, it's going to be Trump after Trump after Trump, beyond this Trump, to the other kids, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He's setting that whole empire up, propping it up with our money. And I don't give two shits about him passing on a few hundred thousand dollars, because he's making hundreds of millions by fleecing America in this way with this Scottish thing. And that's just the most recent example.
You know the best part of this, Frank, by the way, that was an absolutely brilliant segue. You know, I'm looking at Politico, and I'm looking at the New York Times, and Politico is saying that Air Force crews have lodged at Trump's Scottish resort at least four times, dating back to September of 2018. So basically a year. And Trump comes out, and this is the part that kills me, right? This is the shit that kills me. This is the stuff that makes me want to punch him in the throat. He comes out during his, you know, one of his helicopter speeches and says, I had nothing to do with it. I don't know what they're talking about. You know, this, I was, this has nothing to do with me. I don't own the airport and anything, you know, all that other shit. And he doesn't own the airport. However, John Ziegler, who is a conservative senior columnist and talk show host, for Mediate, I believe it is. He's definitely on Free Speech Broadcasting. Posts on Twitter the press release, the 2014, between the Trump Organization and the Prestwick Airport. The Trump Organization and Glasgow Prestwick Airport announced official partnership. This was in 2014. And he stands there in front of the world on White House grounds and says, I don't know. I didn't know anything about it. I had nothing to do with it. You made this mush out of, you know, us Italians. You made this mush out 5 years ago.
Right.
You know, I don't know why the hell they got buried. I had nothing to do with it. Yeah, you made the mush out. You got four chickens for it. Right. Come on. So he's making money off of the Air Force at our expense. How is this not in a Monuments Clause?
It is. It's just that we as a country, for whatever reason, are choosing not to enforce that at this point. So, you know, it's truly amazing in the worst way. And thanks for educating people on the mashup.
You know, sometimes, you know, you get on a roll. You got to do these things. But I mean, I go back to what I said originally, or maybe not originally, but you know, a little while ago. How are people still supporting this?
They contort in any way that they can to fit this into the narrative that they want. And, you know, one of the most prime examples I can use is, there's so many of them, but Kim Jong-un, you know, my friend who I referenced that was in the band earlier, he would say things like, when Obama was in office, this Kim Jong-un, he's going to kill us. He's going to destroy the world. And Obama's not going to do anything about it. And he's, you know, he's talking to him and what's he doing? He's not going to, he needs to cut off any kind of ties with this guy. He needs to starve him out. He needs to, destroy that guy, destroy him, destroy that country. That's the only way we can be safe. Now, fast forward to when Trump goes and goes onto North Korean soil, salutes a North Korean soldier and sits with Kim Jong-un. And he's like, oh yeah, this is what we needed to do. We needed to sit down with him and, you know, be friends with him. And this is how, you know, this is how we're going to resolve this problem. Now, you were just saying how we had to just nuke this guy, preemptively nuke him, get rid of him, freeze him out, starve him out, whatever you had to do to just destroy him. And you switched over because your boy, Donald Trump, pandered to him and his country. And now that's the right way to do it.
Yeah, it's something, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's absolutely something. And I just keep saying the same thing over and over and over again. You know, the only reason he has any kind of clout and power he has is because it's given to him. And the fact that people are so willing to give it to him, particularly the Senate, but even the people who vote for these senators, it just boggles my mind. Anyhow, Frank, I think this is a good place to wrap it up. Great pod as always. You're so on point. It's ridiculous. Is there anything you want to say before we stick a fork in this thing?
I'll remind folks we're 10 days away from an important day. You know, we in America seem to have to schedule things. They've done it spontaneously in other countries. That's okay. Hey, let's just follow through September 21st. We'll have one more pod before then. That's what I want people to do. Circle that date, be in DC or be wherever you can to have your voice and your presence heard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Be there. Make your presence known. Believe it or not, one person, one voice does make a difference. It really, really does. Be a part of this country, be a part of the change and the momentum. Don't stand back and let other people fight your battles for you. So for Frank and myself, before we wrap this up, you want to get a quick plug in for Butchered Sports?
Thank you, Patsy. Yes, Butchered Sports will be doing a pod tomorrow, as we do every week on Thursdays. We'll be wrapping up International Week, and we'll be looking forward to, I'm sure we'll have a few segments, we'll be looking forward to this week's return of La Liga, return of the Serie A schedule and Bundesliga, and maybe a little bit of Premier League talk. But we have a lot to talk about with the U.S. Performance in their friendlies, the Mexico performance in their friendlies. So it'll be lively discussion. I'm sure I'm excited to talk to you and your son about that, Master Patsy. So tune in, listen to our Butchered Sports podcast, subscribe to us on YouTube through your favorite podcast apps, and also follow us on Twitter because we usually post something about sports, in particular soccer. So thank you for that. And please subscribe and hit the notifications bell on YouTube. Thank you.
Absolutely. And like we always say, whether it's Frank and myself or whenever we're with Master Grant, your time is very valuable to you. And while it's very valuable to you, and the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us means a great deal to us. Believe me, it truly, truly does. So for Frank and myself, until next week, same bad time, same bad channel. If you don't get that joke, you're far too young to be listening to this podcast. So we will see you and we will talk to you again next week. Goodbye. Good luck. And God bless.
Hey, wait a minute. I think I've got it.
Butchered Sports. Raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Holy Shit with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, Holy Shit.